Today is the first Sunday of Advent, and if you haven't been involved in a church that celebrates Advent, maybe I should give you just a little background information. Advent is a Latin word which literally means a coming. We celebrate the coming of someone important this time of year. The coming of someone's arrival. Anybody know who we're celebrating in the next 4 weeks? The coming of... What do you think, Emmy? Jesus. For 4 weeks, we will anticipate the coming of Jesus. We will light another candle each week as we build up to Christmas Day. And then after Christmas, we will have the center candle, the white one, the Christ candle lit, and celebrate the Epiphany. And there seems to be a wise guy that's doing the children's times during Advent. This wise guy is going to tell us more about the coming of those who are going to visit this young child. Now, many of us traveled for Thanksgiving. How many of you were traveling a little bit? Did you go out of the state, out of the county? Very few of us. Okay. Some of us traveled for Thanksgiving. Yeah, I know you traveled. That's right. Some people are still traveling this week. And as I thought about travels and the spirit of the holidays, I realized that this past weekend, I celebrated a very important anniversary. This weekend, I celebrated a 10-year anniversary. And of course, the 10-year anniversary is the 10 anniversary. I celebrated the 10 anniversary with something that I have this ongoing relationship with. This relationship where we have these interactions on a daily basis. Because in the year 2002... the weekend of Thanksgiving, I began this relationship with my Volkswagen Jetta. 10 years ago, last weekend, I bought my car. We've been through some good times, and we've been through some bad times. We've gone and seen much of the country. We've traveled near and far. We've traveled as far as Shickley, Nebraska, and as far as Stanton, Virginia. Together, my Volkswagen and I picked up our life in Ohio and drove to your lovely city, our lovely city. But it hasn't all been good. There was that time that she left me stranded on the side of the road when that right rear wheel bearing went out. But we're stronger because of it. Our relationship is better. We were able to get through it. And today, I am glad to be celebrating this 10-year anniversary. You can clap. Now, this is probably going to be one of the last anniversaries that we celebrate. Because this Volkswagen, I know, it's sad. This Volkswagen is kind of on its last legs. It burns as much oil as it does gas. The transmission slips, especially when it gets cold. And in spite of the warm weather we're enjoying today, you know it's only going to get colder. So I know that our time is short. And because this Volkswagen is old and because it has so many miles on it, I'm not about to invest in a new transmission. Is that a wise decision, Danny? Danny says, yeah, don't do it. Now, it's a little bit different with our Honda. Our Honda Civic is 6 years old. And we've had it since its birth. It's been so touching. We've been through some good times as well, and it's in a lot better shape. It's got quite a few miles, I think 127,000 miles on it, but we plan to have this car for a much longer time. It's got some small things that don't work quite as well as we would like them to, but yet it's still a healthy car. We plan to have an ongoing relationship with the Civic. And because of this, this past summer when the air conditioner went out in the Civic, we decided to make an investment and repair the air conditioning. Now, if the air conditioner would have gone out in the Volkswagen, there's no way I would have put the money into fixing it, right? If you don't have any plans to keep a car, you're not going to put a lot of money into it unless you think you're going to get a little bit more money when you sell it, and that's not the case for the Jetta. And I was thinking about this week as I was thinking about travels and all these trips that people are taking during the holiday season. And I kind of came to this understanding. One spends, invests, and lives their life differently based on their long-term view and goals. How you see things in the future, how you want to invest in them, is dictated by your goals, what you anticipate being your reality on down the line. So I want to keep this in our mind today as we look at Jeremiah. Now, Jeremiah is kind of a gloomy person. He has been called the weeping prophet. He's probably not the guy that you would seek out at a party and want to hang out with and, you know, exchange stories with, because he's kind of a downer. But you see, Jeremiah is a guy who is living at a very interesting time in history. And we need to go back and kind of look at some of the things that were going on when Jeremiah was writing so we can better understand why he's saying the things that he is saying. So Jeremiah was active prophetically around the year 582 BC, 580 some years before Jesus' birth. And he was living in the southern kingdom, which we often call Judah. If you remember, cartography fans unite here. If you remember, the kingdom of Israel is divided after King Solomon's reign. And there is a group that lives in the northern part, which is often referred to as the northern kingdom of Israel. And there is the southern kingdom of Judah. You can't really see it, but right there is Jerusalem, the Dead Sea, just to kind of give you a little bit of background. So Jeremiah is living just outside of Jerusalem in the southern kingdom. Now, the northern kingdom would have gone into exile around the year 722 BC. So about 150 some years before Jeremiah was writing here, he saw his family, his friends, people that had similar lineages and backgrounds to him, carried off by the Assyrians. The Assyrians were a strong nation, and they came in and they just took the land of the northern kingdom of Israel. And not only did they take the land, they took the people and they picked them up and they took them out into exile. This was a strategy to keep the people from rising up against nations. They took the people and scattered them throughout the country so they couldn't bound together to fight and resist the Assyrians. So that was around 722 BC. But the southern kingdom was able to withstand these attacks by the Assyrians, and some people claim it was because of their geographical location. If you look at the map here, you can't really see the mountain range, but the city of Jerusalem is right along this mountain range. And many people say that because of this geographical positioning, Judah, the kingdom of Judah, was able to survive the Assyrian attacks. But Jeremiah, this prophet of God, says that they will not be so lucky this time. Because now, around the year 582 BC, the Babylonians are coming to power. And the Babylonians are so powerful that they are able to overtake the Assyrians. And they come into town and they eventually carry off the people of the southern kingdom into exile themselves. So this is the atmosphere that Jeremiah finds himself in. He is amongst this feeling that this powerful nation, this nation of Babylon, is about to invade his country and do the very things that he has seen the Assyrians do to his friends and his relatives in the northern region. So Jeremiah, being a prophet, he has this foreknowledge that this is going to happen. He knows that the Babylonians are coming, and he knows that Judah is going to fall. So since he is a good prophet, he does what? He shares that news. He prophesies. That's what prophets do. So he goes from town to town, from city to city, telling the people that they are about to be overtaken by the Babylonians. And King Zedekiah, the king of the southern district, the southern kingdom, I'm going to say southern district a few times. We as a church here are a part of the southern district of the Mennonite Church, of Virginia Mennonite Conference. So if I say southern district, please excuse me, I mean southern kingdom. So Zedekiah is the king of the southern kingdom, not the king of the southern district. We don't have a king. Anyways, Zedekiah does not care for Jeremiah's predictions. He does not care to hear these prophecies from Jeremiah. So what does the king do? He throws him in jail. That little thing that we have called freedom of speech, wasn't really applicable in those days. So Jeremiah is thrown into prison because he prophesies the downfall of the nation, but he continues to prophesy from jail. Then in Jeremiah chapter 22, Jeremiah does something extremely strange, something we would not anticipate someone with his foreknowledge of the things to come to actually do. Jeremiah buys a field. Jeremiah becomes a landowner. Now that's strange for somebody that knows that the Babylonians are about to come and overtake your country, right? It's strange especially because Jeremiah buys land in the southern kingdom. Jeremiah buys land where he knows somebody else is going to live and farm and grow things and produce things and make a living off of. It's strange, especially because he has that foreknowledge that he's not going to be able to live there, to work there, and to make a living. And it doesn't make sense. It would be like me putting money into my Volkswagen, knowing that it's about to die. It's like me investing in a new air conditioning compressor when my car is on its last legs. So this is the context for what Jeremiah is saying in today's passage. Jeremiah sees this coming. He sees the Babylonians coming and this way. he sees the Babylonians coming and he prophesies this to the people. So we come to Jeremiah chapter 33, and it just starts out with a gloomy feeling. Jeremiah talks about how the land is desolate, how it is uninhabited. He's just got this down feeling, this gloomy feeling. Like I said, you wouldn't want to hang out with him at a party. But Jeremiah goes on, and he says this in verse 11. He says, "But there will come a time when the sounds of joy and gladness, the voices of bride and bridegroom, and the voices of those who bring thank offerings to the house of the Lord, saying, 'Give thanks to the Lord Almighty, for the Lord is good, His love endures forever,' will fill this land again." I don't know how that happened, but that was interesting. So he has this prophetic message that he begins to share, that yes, things are looking bad, but things are really bad. We're going to be taken away. You're going to enter into exile, but it will not last forever. And knowing that is supposed to help them endure this time of exile. All right, so we traveled during the last Thanksgiving holiday, Sonia, the children, and I. We packed up our Honda Civic rather than the Volkswagen, because the Volkswagen doesn't make it out of the county. We loaded up the Civic and we made the trip to Ohio. And it's really an easy trip road-wise. If you just go out on 64 and head west until you get to 77 north, that'll take you like a half an hour from my home. It's, you know, easy peasy lemon squeezy, no problems at all. You get on the road, you get there, no concerns at all. Right, you can remember those directions, right? Not hard. 64 to 77, it's simple. And the way I travel, I don't like to stop at all. I am the kind of guy that if I don't have to get out in West Virginia, I won't. And I have found out, nothing against West Virginia, but if I can fill up the gas tank when I leave Stanton, I don't have to get out until I reach the Ohio border. So that's the kind of traveler I am. So this is a very simple trip across 64, up 77, a few back roads, and I'm at Mom and Dad's house. It's simple in theory. In practice, things are a little bit different. Things have changed a bit over the last 3 years or so, because that trip becomes much more difficult with two young children. Now, Paxton is a wonderful traveler. It's kind of amazing. He's almost 3 years old, 34 months old, and he just sat back there in his little car seat and looked out the window at the passing trees and the mountains and the cars, and every now and then, ooh, big truck. He got excited. That's the kind of traveler he is. When he got bored, we would say, "Paxton, look for deer," and he'd just sit there looking for deer. That was amazing. I loved traveling with Paxton this time. His sister, not so much. love my little daughter Hadley, 8 months old last Sunday. And she is absolutely precious in that wonderful stage of life where everything is new. She is babbling and woke me up this morning with words of dad, 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 which you know she was actually directing toward me, not just randomly babbling. She's eating new foods every day. Some of them she likes, some of them she decorates the house with. She's just fun because she is mobile, she is active, she is crawling, she's pulling herself up on things, walking around tables by holding on to the things, and she's even climbing some stairs now. Amazing time of life for an 8-month-old. But all of that activity, all of that need to move, I think, is what made it so hard for her to be strapped in a car seat for 7 hours. The first 2 hours of our trip to Ohio, she screamed constantly. Screamed at the top of her lungs. And that normally chillaxed little 2.5-year-old Paxton, he sat there and he just tried to ignore her, looking out the tree or out the window, looking for deer or whatever it was. But every now and then you could see him just get frustrated, and he would lean over to her and he would yell, "Hadley, we're people." We figure that he's saying, "We're not animals, stop acting like it." And every now and then he would add emphasis, he would break that contraction. He'd say, "Hadley, we are people." Like if she didn't get it the first time, maybe she'd get it this time. It was frustrating for all of us. So this guy that normally doesn't